connection to Kennedy, Byers, and Scott. Why do I mention Kennedy, who is the Chamber of Commerce Man of the Year, by the way, as of last Friday, and of course one of the biggest disappointments of the decade to the rest of us who saw him come in as some kind of a liberal and go out as a completely disgraced redeveloper tool, in essence, or cheerleader for that kind of stuff, including curfews and bans on spare change and all kinds of nastiness when he claimed to be against, for example, the sleeping ban, even against the entire camping ban. That's Scott Kennedy, the city council. He's going out. Why should he be called at 429-3550? Because this item, the sleeping ban, has to go on the agenda on the 24th. And he's one of the old council members who could put it on the agenda. And he should be held accountable, like the rest of them. He should be put under pressure. He should be put under the spotlight. He has already been, this has been done to him around the beach boardwalk and beach flats bulldozing boondoggle that he tried to do. But now we've got to hold him to other things, and more important, hold people like Byers, who will continue on, not just on the council, but as mayor, who walk the walk as well as talking the talk, to get off her posterior and put something on the agenda on the 24th, or have a damn good reason why not. Her reason is, I talked to her the other day, the Brown Act means I can't talk to any of the council members that are coming in because I've already talked to a couple of the council members going out about this issue, so I feel all alone. I'll have to wait until I figure out what to do. Well, I'm sorry, Catherine Byers, this issue has been around for many years, and most important, the Sleeping Ban Repeal Initiative, carefully put together and passed by the city attorney, and law that's gotten 3,000 plus signatures, didn't quite make it on the ballot, but many, many registered voters asked for it to be put on the ballot. You know what that law is, or you damn well should know, and if you don't, you can give me a call at 423-HUFF. And by the way, for those of you who are listening, I've been ranting so much, I've failed to give you our call-in number here in the studio at Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. It's 427-3772. 427-3772. So, enough of my talking. How about you calling in and letting me hear what you think of all this? And while you find the right change for the payphone, that's kind of expensive to call on payphones, but when you pick up your own phone and call 427-3772, we'll play a little music that tied us over.
November
7th,
thank you.
I've slept up on Croton, I've camped by the Wainstones as well. I've sunbathed on Kinder, been burned to a cinder, and many more things I can tell. My rucksack has often been my pillow, the heather has often my bed, and sooner than far from the mountains, I think I would rather be dead. I'm a rambler from Manchester way. I get all my pleasure the hard moorland way. I may be a wage slave on Monday, but I am a free man on Sunday. The day was just ending and I was descending down Brian's Brook just by Upper Tor, when a voice cried, "Hey you, in the way keepers do, heed the worst face that ever I saw." The things that he said were unpleasant, in the teeth of his fury I said, sooner than thought from the mountains, I think I would rather be dead. I'm a rambler from Manchester way. I get all me pleasure the hard moorland way. I may be a white slave on Monday, but I am a free man on Sunday. He called me a louse and said, think of the grouse. Well, I fought, but I still couldn't see why old Kin the Scout and the Moors round about couldn't take both the poor grouse and me. He said, all this land is my master's. At that I stood shaking my head. No man has the right to own mountains any more than the deep ocean can. I'm a rambler, from Manchester way. I get all my pleasure the hard Morland way. I may be a wage slave on Monday, but I am a free man on Sunday. I once loved a maid, a Scots welder by trade. She was fair as the rowan in bloom, and the blue of her eye matched the June moorland sky. And I would her from April till June. On the day that we should have been married, I went for a ramble instead. For sooner than far from the mountains, I think I would rather be dead. I'm a rambler, from Manchester way. I get all my pleasure the hard moorland way. I may be a wage slave on Monday, but I am a free man on Sunday. So I'll walk where I will, over mountain and hill, and I'll lie where the bracken is deep. I belong to the mountains, the clear running fountains, where the grey rocks rise rugged and steep. I've seen the white hare in the gullies, and the curlew fly high overhead. And sooner than far from the mountains, I think I would rather be dead. I'm a rambler, from Manchester way. I get all my pleasure the hard moorland way. I may be a wage slave on Monday, but I am a free man on Sunday.
And that's Ewan McCall from Black and White. Old Ewan, no longer with us, was one of the most impressive political satirists and biting song singers I've ever heard. Really enjoyed him. And his partner, Peggy Seeger, is still with us. And she's Pete Seeger's half-sister. And she sings great stuff, too. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, and we actually had a phone call right before that last selection. And Chris, if you want to call in back, we'll pick you up at 427-3772. Hoping to catch you again, and you get an opportunity to speak to us, and we to you. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz at 96.3. And we are in the midst of Bathrop Spears Broadsides, which is the Price Weekly Civil Rights Show you can catch on our station at 11 o'clock on Sundays, runs to 1:30, and then at 6 o'clock on Thursdays, which goes until 8. Well, I have interviews aplenty here, and I'm going to keep playing them because I think they're voices from the streets that we really need to hear. So let's hear a little more from Voices Downtown. The people that are feeling this sweep them off the streets kind of mentality that's hitting us as the Thanksgiving season goes into high gear.
We're talking to
Linda Liu.
Linda, you just came into town
2 days ago.
And you were on foot or in car?
We were in a car. We got left from San Francisco and we got directed towards Santa Cruz and thought it'd be a pretty cool place to come.
Now, who is we?
Me and my boyfriend.
And what is the name of this man with the guitar?
Steve. My name's Steve, bro.
Steve, I'm Robert.
What's up, Robert?
This is Free Radio Santa Cruz I'm interviewing for.
Right on.
We're trying to get a kind of a a sense of how people in transit are treated by different authorities.
This is my second interview of such of the day.
Whoa, well, we interviewed by
UC Santa Cruz. University of Santa Cruz, they came and interviewed about fashion and how it affects how people treat people.
Well, fashion, fascism, it's always a...
Well, fashion, the two words are so close for a reason, at least I think.
Well, you got some unusual fashions, as you can see, as you look to my left here, passing by.
Most certainly.
Commendable stuff here.
Quite attractive, man with wonderful legs.
Man with a kilt, yes. Good-looking color scheme.
Never mess with a man with a kilt, they're always pissed off.
Is that right?
Well, how would you feel if you had pissed all that wool rubbing up against you, bro?
Well,
I'd be a little chafed.
Someone would want to pull the wool over my eyes, perhaps.
I wouldn't want that wool over my eyes.
Well, perhaps not. We'll leave this obnoxious banter and move on to more important subjects. So what about, you've both been traveling together for a while?
Yeah, we've been traveling this time a couple of weeks, but we've been together for a little while. We've been running around the country, you know, doing different things.
Any unusual things happening in different cities?
I think everything's unusual. I've been in Cincinnati forever. Everything's unusual to me.
Halloween was beautiful. We saw fish in Las Vegas. That was absolutely insane. One of the craziest cities in the world, and with some of the craziest people there. Halloween in Vegas is spectacular, but I don't know.
But you haven't been suffering any kind of discrimination because of your hair length, slight beard, and freckles, whatever.
No.
Not so much. Once, like, our trip to Nebraska and through the Midwest, we weren't too popular, but once we started getting towards, like, Boulder, we're tame compared to what they see all the time. We don't have dreadlocks, you know. So pretty much, yeah, we haven't faced much discrimination except for the people we've been with, and that was for a completely different reason. I don't think it had anything to do with how we looked. Mostly, actually, it's helped us out in a couple spots.
Yeah. How's that been?
Meeting kids like us who have helped us out.
Yeah. And where have you been sleeping while you've been here in St. Louis?
We, a bunch of us, threw in for a hotel room that we really couldn't afford, but we didn't want to sleep on the street, and looks like tonight we're going to have to go find somewhere to crash down by the beach, and don't have anywhere to stay.
No way. With us today is the vicious Chris Rosedale, also known as Crossroads Chris. We're here at the right front of Mobo's Sushi, about 5:10. Hi there, Chris.
The light is nice, yeah.
So, Chris, you have been a man who's been barred from Pacific Avenue. Is this because you're a bad influence on the merchants?
No, I was a good influence. So I was spending my money down there on food and coffee and things.
So, in other words, we have some diluted banishment orders that have been set into play. When can you return to Pacific Avenue without being pursued by Sergeant whoever it may be?
I think it's August 1, 1999. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I think we should use yours as a test case, go back to court and get that order revoked. That way. Are you on probation? Is that the thing?
I'm on probation till then, yeah.
And so this is probation for which particular offense?
Well, otherwise I'd have to do about 50 days in jail to finish the probation.
Well, considering the last time you did more than about 70 days in jail and you just got nothing for your time but more shit,
nothing.
You might be good to get that probation out of the way, but of course this is from a man who's not going to jail, and it's easy for me to talk. How have you been camper-wise? You're a man who sleeps illegally every night.
They've been tolerating it. I'm happy.
Uh-huh.
And this is probably not after this interview.
Right. Now, I want you to seek out and destroy the campsite of Chris Rosedale. Be on the lookout.
It wouldn't be hard to do, you know. It really wouldn't.
What have you heard from other people? Are they going after other campers or not?
I think everybody's going to Albania. They're having better luck in Albania.
What about other locals? Anything happening?
What about other campers? Oh, I have no idea. I was just down at the shelter, though.
Are you and Karen Gillette, have you struck up a new relationship?
I don't have. I think she's driving a $50,000 automobile around.
Well,
you said she's making 50 grand a year, right?
Doesn't she deserve all our thanks?
Well, she backs Steinau, right?
Well, Steinau, that's the downtown Duchess, right?
I'm not sure who, isn't she one of the most conservative, so-called?
Yes, so I would say she's the front woman for the Downtown Association.
The board of the...
HCRC.
Do you go to those meetings?
Homeless Community Resource Center. You know, it's the last Thursday of every month if you want to go, I believe.
Last Thursday. So that would be, that's coming up, huh?
It is coming up. Yeah. So, any reports from the streets? Well, let me put it this way. If people wanted to run into you, not at your campsite, because I know that is a federal secret, but they wanted to...
Well, have them come to, check a bike ride with me out to Capitola.
Like, no, no. What cup of coffee of Zelda's and then back? Where do you hang out here in Santa Cruz? Any particular coffee shop?
Kelly's Pastry.
Kelly's Pastry. Yeah. And that's
good coffee.
Good coffee. Is that a particular time of day that you?
Morning, usually.
But anytime, actually.
Okay.
Well, I appreciate the interview. I'm running, otherwise I'd actually talk to you longer, but I gotta go. Any final words for the
minute? What are you up to?
I'm sort of, taking reports from people on the street and writing a new street shit sheet.
Do you have the old one for me?
And that was Crossroads' Chris Brosdorf, who has been barred from the Pacific Garden Mall, and so he can't go to the coffee shops he normally goes. Maybe he can reach him at Emily's Pastries in the morning. I'm going to try a phone call to Catnip Kate Wells, local attorney, for an update. Here's a phone ringing here. Let's switch to our phone line.
Catnip Kate, hello! And, well, you're we know we're catching you in the midst of the big game.
Big game.
You've been pursuing even bigger game, though. You've been, I guess, trying to get together some kind of commemorative ceremony for Sean Alimi, the man of the people who was feeding the people, as well as fighting the saving band, who was killed in a tragic automobile accident about a week ago.
Yes, I have. And I met with his brother yesterday, and tentative plans awaiting confirmation from the Vet Hall tomorrow would be that we're going to have a celebration of Sean's life on Saturday the 21st, which is a week from yesterday, and we welcome all. It's going to be, as Sean would say, a manja manja fest.
Manja manja meaning eat.
Fest. We're going to have lots of food and maybe even some live music.
His brother will be there.
Welcome.
I understand his brother is coming all the way from out of the country into town.
He's here from Puerto Rico. And we wanted to be a happy thing. The other thing I wanted to announce is that we have opened an account at Comerica Bank. It's called the Sean Alimi Memorial Fund. And its purpose is to erect a permanent kind of monument to Sean somewhere along the mall, the Garden Mall.
Of course, I'm looking for a monument to Sean that would mean a nightly monument where people would no longer have to be afraid of sleeping outside.
Well, certainly that would be a part of it. That his two favorite causes were that and and feeding people. So, that's the purpose. So anybody who would like to donate to the fund can do it through me at 479-4475.
479-4475. We're talking to Attorney Kate Wells. Kate, I know you you showed up yesterday at the kind of mini manja manja spaghetti feed that Tirith and Sunrise feed the people who've kind of taken over for Sean.
Yes.
In the interim we're at. You spoke quite, I didn't hear what you said. I got to that homeless community resource center shindig late, but
uh-huh.
A lot of people seem quite subdued, and I was impressed with their interest in, I guess, the political dimensions, you might say, if you want to call it political, though Sean insisted that he's not political.
No, that's not political.
That's it. But he was concerned, of course, I mean, not being political, he spent more time in jail than I would say most of us political folks ever do.
Well, I think he's not political in the way Sandy Loringer wasn't political, but became the...
Sandy Loringer, of course, is the woman who went to jail for serving free food at the town clock in 1989 in a series of
probation.
Because she said she was beyond rehabilitation when they told her she had to agree not to feed people again, and that would be her rehabilitation.
Right.
But it was through her meals that, of course, the free meal at Karen Gillette's free meal was set up, and it became established that food, not bombs, and feed the people could feed without daily harassment, although Sean was still getting harassed by the police anyway.
Yeah, there were a couple of cops, Eveleth and Ogre and Headley, who continued to harass Sean unmercifully. Sean was facing charges at the time of his death, and
you're going to be clearing into those charges.
Those charges have been dropped.
And you will be seeking a declaration of factual innocence?
Yes, and I informed the DA I'd be doing that the other day, and she informed me that she was going to fight me to the death.
Oh, good. We can see some mud wrestling here.
So, you know, we'll have to see. I'm going to make her bring them on, and I'm going to make them sit up there and testify and tell their lies under oath if need be.
Do we have any upcoming hearing dates that we should know about?
Not yet.
Now, this is always inspiring news when people come together to vindicate others.
Yep.
There was some rather depressing news, however, last week about how Brian Andrus was shot 5 times by officers, Barry, Hennig, and
Garazio,
after his home was invaded by, I guess, Officer Garazio. And even though a jury refused to find him guilty, he has decided to go to prison for 4 years. Do you want to? I know that you have a conflict of interest because you were the attorney for Lori Andrus, who is his.
I still am.
You are the attorney. I guess you were you were going to seek some sort of civil compensation for this.
Yeah, actually, I went for all three, Lori and her daughter Hannah and Brian.
I was particularly outraged, of course, because this whole incident was supposedly to protect the Lori and her daughter Hannah. I think they saw a little blood on the the door sill.
Yeah, he cut his hand.
They claimed he'd been driving erratically because he parked on it. And there was a loud argument, but they saw Lori Andrus. They came to the house and they saw that she was unarmed. They saw her through the window. She asked them to go away, and they instead shoved in the door and broke in and
grabbed her
and got into a confrontation with Brian, who came down the stairway with a baseball bat.
Right. They grabbed her, and that's all he saw was Lori with her arms in the air being held.
Did they have probable cause?
So he went to protect himself. Did they have probable cause?
Right.
They had probable cause to probably go to the door, but once Lori Andrus showed her body to them that she was okay, that there wasn't any sign of any kind of violence, and she told them at that point to leave, then at that point the proper thing would have been for them to leave.
Prudent, decent, and sensible thing to do. But we haven't even heard that this policy is likely to change. I mean, there's no indication that Belcher, the police chief of our department, feels in any way. He completely justified these policies, as I recall, within a few days after the...
I guess that the only ray of light I've heard so far is that some of the new council members to be seated believe that the police review board is a
piece of shit?
Yeah, well, to put it...
Stacked by a number of fancy, sweet-smelling turds,
right.
I have to say.
So, you know, we may see some changes there, and that would certainly be welcome. Just people getting together. You were there at the seminar up at UCSD. Some incredibly powerful people, powerful speakers. The son of the individual, the 60-year-old man who was killed
Charles
in
Vaughn, Sr.
Monterey from wielding a corkscrew.
Right, corkscrew on our seaside roof. He was shot dead.
Right.
Capped.
Told them repeatedly to go away, leave him alone. He was on his own property, wasn't hurting anyone. And they just continued at him until, the one officer decided to join him on the roof, and he informed the other officers that if the man tried to stand up, that they should cap him.
Right.
We're going to be
hearing the story directly from Charles Vaughn Jr. We got a tape on it. But I wanted to ask
Andrus. Yeah.
Getting back to Andrus,
why would
this man, having essentially at least saved himself from conviction?
There's no one factor. It's a combination of many factors. It's a combination of the fact that he is facing 9 years. Possibly 9 years in prison. It's the fact that he's tired of fighting. It's the fact that the DA has vowed to try him as many times as is necessary to get a conviction.
We're losing this DA. We have a new DA coming in. Doesn't that give him any hope? No? Maybe you could tell us a little bit about that too, Kate. We know you've been around.
Yeah.
The scuttlebutt is that you are one of the inside sources of what's going on in the Santa Cruz or injustice system. D.A.R. Danner is being, as I understand, considered for a judgeship. Is that right?
Yeah.
What's that all about?
It's going to be Pete Wilson's last dastardly act before he leaves office is to
impose
to name the highest profile criminal in Santa Cruz County as a judge. Yeah. It's sick. What can I say? You know. How am I going to try a case in front of Art Danner? You know. I mean. I was a strong supporter of Ed Frye. I signed his statement of intent.
Ed Frye was, of course, the individual who ran against Danner. And Danner has been, there have been recall petitions circulated, what, six, seven, eight times now?
Definitely.
For against
Yeah,
this
his
man.
Crimes are well outlined by several people, but people seem to continue to ignore it.
What are his crimes?
Probably the most blatant of which was the auto accident on Ocean Street where he pulled out of the Holiday Inn and went the wrong way on Ocean Street and hit a woman. And
instead of getting out and blood tested himself, had the woman ready.
He escorted him home with no kind of blood test or field sobriety test, even though he admitted to having ordered one drink. He was, of course, meeting with a bunch of people who were trying to sell him computers, so my guess is that he ordered one drink to let him know what it was he wanted, and from then on they bought. At any rate, he had no test whatsoever, whereas they did test the woman.
Oh, they tested the victim.
That's right. Yeah. And he was escorted home, but no charges.
This was back in 1988?
Yeah.
What was the name of this woman?
Can't tell you off the top of my head.
I know that there was a...
Bob LaMonica would be the person to talk to.
Yeah, Battling Bob often calls into the show.
Right.
And there was, of course, a more recent incident involving a woman who was kept on the payroll who had been using cocaine.
Oh, right.
But, I've got nothing against people using cocaine, frankly.
Yeah.
I couldn't care less.
Well,
keeping them on the payroll and at the same time harassing others and ruining families and putting people in jail, the same thing, you're suborning your subordinates for doing and paying them on the public payroll at the same time is quite
tough. The latest, of course, would be Patty Bizarre's sexual discrimination.
Patty Bizarre is a district attorney who actually prosecuted me in 1989, but we've since become, fairly amiable with each other and exchange information at different times.
Patty Bizarre, I consider to be one of the fair district attorneys, and she's been repeatedly shat upon by them and discriminated against.
In what sense? How can you put this?
In terms of her assignments, in terms of, they evidently tried to, after she brought an action against them, they tried to sneak stuff into her file, that were derogatory things into her file that she had never seen before. Typical dirty tricks coming out of that office. So, at any rate...
How about D.A. Kate Wells? What do you think?
Yeah. that's about as likely as Chief Kate Wells. Or
Sheriff Wells, yeah.
Or Judge Kate Wells.
Well, what would you do, Kate, if you were actually appointed D.A.? What kind of actions would you institute in this county? What would your priorities be?
I mean, the first thing I would do is start to... obviously you can't change the laws, but what you can do is change how you go about prosecuting things. And so, my first act would be to immediately call any kind of non-victim crime, prostitution, drugs, that sort of thing, the lowest priority crime, and probably...
Which would reduce your caseload by about four-fifths.
Exactly. So that I'd be able to fire all of the bad DAs and...
How many are they?
Too numerous to count.
What percentage of the department do you think you would fire?
Am I asking trying to get me in trouble here?
Not
I
really.
Could, I mean, you know, Art may be listening right now. You know?
Could be. Come on, call in, Art. We want to hear from you.
Oh, shoot. I can't answer that. I just take the fifth on that. I have to work with him every day.
That, of course, is the problem with a lot of public defenders, we find.
Right.
And even a lot of judges involving the testimony of police officers, and why they tend to be so touchy about, let's say, finding an officer lied.
Yeah.
Or even that there's reasonable doubt if you have to compare the police officer's account with the victim's account, mm-hmm. or the suspect's account, if you will.
Right.
You know, we're talking about victimless crimes like sleeping, like drug use, like drug sales, like, you know, what about drunk driving? You know, you yourself have kind of pioneered a whole new system of dealing with, I guess, what many regard as harassment, unjustified behavior by police officers around tickets, so-called taking to a magistrate, verified.
Did you ask me first about drunk driving?
I did ask you about drunk driving.
Oh, well, I feel like anyone else does. I don't want anybody out there endangering my life.
So
I think if there's probable cause to stop someone because their driving is erratic, then I think
right.
I think that there's
that's good.
That they should be stopped and shouldn't be allowed to, you know, get back on the road.
Right. Now,
so that's
moving. I'm sorry. Maybe I slipped that one in too quickly. What about this other process you're talking about people who are being, you know, stopped for broken tail lights?
Well, it's a process. It has to do with the court getting jurisdiction over you. The court can't get jurisdiction over you basically unless you agree to in an infraction type situation. So the way they get that is by you signing your ticket. So what? Interception. I'm sorry. So what you should do...
She's keeping her eyes on the TV screen, folks.
Okay, so what you should do is when the officer asks you, if you care to fuck with the system, and you know, if everyone did this, we could obviously put a big monkey wrench into things. What you do is you ask the officer... what he would do if you refused to sign the ticket and instead asked to be taken to a magistrate. If he tells you he will take you to jail, then the next question is, will you take me to jail to be booked, or will you take me to jail to see a magistrate? Or some sort of an impartial hearer of the issue of probable cause. If he tells you that he is going to take you to jail to book you and to actually put you in jail, then you can go ahead and sign the ticket. The following day.
Which will stop him from taking you. Yeah.
Right, which will stop him from taking you to jail. The following day, you take a written rescission of your signature and serve it upon the DA's office, the sheriff's office, any other law enforcement office involved.
No.
Stating that you rescind your signature because it was
given under duress. And you, of course, will have a form out about that probably by next Christmas.
We're trying to, but it's, you know, boy, all kinds of things
are intervening, yeah.
Have come up, so
well,
I've got to concentrate on first things first.
This phone call certainly was one of them,
yes.
And I want to let you get back to that
Thank you. Thank you.
We've been talking to attorney Katnip K. Wells again. If you want to help the Shaw Memorial Fund, and also, I guess, we must have some concern about Sean's partner with Feed the People, who was
John
Earth, in the accident. He needs glasses. He has dental surgery. His front teeth were knocked out. His lung has been injured.
Right.
I guess he was kicked out of the hospital early because he wasn't covered by insurance.
Right.
Because he failed to keep his car insurance.
Yes.
Yeah,
so anybody who's interested in helping out on any of these things, then get in touch with me.
Again, your phone number, Kate, is?
479-4475.
479-4475. Thank you very much, Kate.
Uh-huh.
Bye-bye.
And that was attorney Kate Wells. I am Robert Norris, and you are listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3 FM on your radio. 427-3772 is our calling number for all of you bashful listeners who now are going to take the bull by the horns and give us a call and let us know what's been happening with you, what you think of what we're talking about. What should we be talking about? Well, we're civil rights for the poor here, but tell us what you think. 427-3772. And do tell the City Council what you think about putting the sleeping ban on the agenda on November 24th. We hope you will call 429-3550 and then push pound and tell the City Council that you want that issue on the agenda. Particularly direct this to Celia Scott, the mayor, Catherine Byers, the incoming mayor, and Scott Kennedy, who supposedly has been in negotiations all summer to set up a repeal of the sleeping ban, and then apparently missed the last two or three meetings, and now seems to be sort of scampering out the back door, getting feted instead, and feted in more ways than one, by the Civic Chamber of Commerce. He's the man of the year. Well, hey, I will I'll pat him on the back as well if he'll, as a final action, put this legislation on the agenda. You have to tell him, put the sleeping ban repeal on the agenda. 429-3550. Call the City Council and press the pound key. 429-3550. And call me here at the Free Radio. I'm at 427-3772. We have open lines. And here's some musical thoughts from another man whose life was cut short, like Sean and Amy's was, in an untimely manner. This is from Phil Oakes, who actually ended his own life. He'd been attacked in Africa on one of his tours, and his beautiful voice had been damaged. And some thought that was a CIA black op. But all I know is that we have his earlier songs that remain with us, just as we have Sean and Amy's great work of feeding people and spreading that sense that it doesn't matter who you are, it doesn't matter how you're dressed, it doesn't matter what you've done. If you're hungry, there's food for you. And here he is. And Philip seems to say that if you're tired, if you're discouraged, here's music for you. And here that is.
In this world where I'll belong when I'm gone, and I will know the right from the wrong when I'm gone, and you won't find me singing on this song when I'm gone, so I guess I'll have to do it while I'm here. And I won't feel the thread of the time when I'm gone. All the pleasures of love will not be mine when I'm gone. My pen won't pour a lyric line when I'm gone. So I guess I'll have to do it while I'm here. And I won't breathe the bracing air when I'm gone. And I can't even worry about my cares when I'm gone. Won't be asked to do my share when I'm gone, so I guess I'll have to do it while I'm here. And I won't be running from the rain when I'm gone, and I can't even suffer from the pain when I'm gone. Can't say who's to praise and who's to blame when I'm gone, so I guess I'll have to do it while I'm here. Won't see the golden of the sun when I'm gone, and the evenings and the mornings will be one when I'm gone. Can't be singing louder than the guns while I'm gone, so I guess I'll have to do it while I'm here. All my days won't be dances of delight when I'm gone, and the sands will be shifting from my sight when I'm gone. can add my name into the fight while I'm gone. So I guess I'll have to do it while I'm here. And I won't be laughing at the lies when I'm gone. And I can't question how or when or why when I'm gone. Can't look proud enough to die when I'm gone. So I guess I'll have to do it while I'm here. There's no place in this world where I'll belong when I'm gone. And I will know the right from the wrong when I'm gone. And you won't find me singing on this song when I'm gone. So I guess I'll have to do it. I guess I'll have to do it. Guess I'll have to do it while I'm here.
Where it's cold and wet and dark.
We're joining Rendell. I'm speaking for our city council, the last city council meeting. Take that back. We're joining Robert Norris, myself, making a speech at the afternoon session of the last city council meeting, at which a completely vapid statement was being presented. A meaningless, empty statement from Scott Kennedy, Michael Hernandez, and Michael Rotkin, which was kind of the desiccated outcome of the March 4th special homelessness session of a year and a half ago. I describe what this is all about in this speech, and it's a pretty good speech. It was cut short somewhat, as speeches are at City Council. However, see what you think.
Speaking for Half Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, I'd like to point out that this item is not in the agenda packet or the others. And disadvantages some of us as far as getting access to it. That said, it's really ironic that 3 days ago, a man who did more for homeless people each month than this council has done in 4 years died in an auto crash on I-5. Few people cooked Sean O'Leary would have had a hearty horse laugh at this toothless inflated mission statement, which inflates service figures and carefully ignores human rights. It's feel-good, international problem avoidance of our own responsibilities is in sharp contrast to the work of real street activists like Illumi, who took daily responsibility for the hungry and the cold people he met. To understand this bogus blabber, we must understand the reasons behind the March 4th, 97 special session out of which it sprung. That gala dog and pony show was a scrap thrown to the community rather than deal with the winter shelter crisis of 1996. Rotkin's council tossed us this bone after Rotkin's renegades gagged Kennedy, Byers, and Scott, refusing to allow them a debate on the emergency shelter amendments that they brought forward after Sean O'Leary's 7.5-month-long City Hall Sleepers protest. That protest, in which O'Leary survived a month in jail for protest sleeping in front of this very building, dramatically showed that fewer than 200 shelter beds, or floor spaces actually, cannot serve 500 to 1,500 homeless people each night. This situation tonight was even worse. There will be space for less than 30 homeless people in emergency shelter, not the 174 beds supposedly available according to this deceptive staff report. It took a year and a half for the community to finally rebel against Rotkin's gag-rag regime. But 61% of the voters said yes on Fitzmaurice Crumley Sugar and no on the Kennedy Rotkin service. After 6 hours of testimony and 18 months of waiting, you would think that the Rotkin Hernandez Kennedy Social Services Committee would actually come up with some new emergency shelter beds instead of the same self-serving rhetoric and inflated service estimates. There has been no expansion. There are no 24-hour bathrooms, so modest decency is beyond the gang that doesn't mind asking the public purse from developers and lawyers and preparing to bulldoze the beachfronts for Mercy Housing. After delaying the report for months in a fashion reminiscent of how it dragged down an gutted citizen police review, Kennedy and subsequently the Rockton Council came up with a report that ignored every bit of testimony concerning the biggest issue, criminalization of the poor. Denial of public space for the homeless is the issue for the poor in town after town. Whether it's Rockton's, Berkeley's disappear the young felony grass busts on Telegraph, hundreds of people in jail up there, Brown's in San Francisco, new jail, the alcoholics, brainstorm, or Michael Hernandez's lock off the San Lorenzo River after dark curfew, the real point is to rid the city of the visible body. This process for running California by the City Council in 1994, its downtown ordinances has spread like a cancer from city to city, making life-sustaining functions like sitting on the sidewalk, peacefully spare-changing, holding nighttime protests downtown, criminal behavior, all to placate the paranoia and the redevelopment addiction of a few merchants, out-of-town profiteers, and their politician pals. Why is there no mention of basic rights for the homeless? On the streets, in shelter services, in employment, housing, and public accommodation, and against hate crime in this document. Because this council has made a practice to support institutional hate crime against the poor, we poured millions into the police department and a real handful of pennies into the social services through passing and supporting laws to criminalize the poor for life-sustaining behavior like sleeping, sitting, and bedding. Look at the council report. Who is this working group with extensive experience to help prepare this sellout statement? Our wager with the Community Action Board didn't have much to do with its fatally flawed final draft. Where were the public hearings we see written about? What homeless activists were actually invited to? Why is it that only one out of 103 local social service providers actually responded to this report, according to one cab worker? If a genuine crisis exists, then why isn't this council dealing with it instead of sitting on its hands and its butts and playing powder cake with Canfield while getting away the riverfront? I'm glad to hear that the cliche housing is a basic human right is in this document, but other fundamental rights...